God,
grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to all in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Newcomers, is there anybody here in their first 30 days of sobriety? We would just like to welcome you. You just raise your hand, give us your first name. On Zoom, you can raise your hand and somebody in the Zoom room will chat with you. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Feel free to put them away. You don't need them. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. This group practices the spiritual foundations of anonymity, singleness of purpose, and effective sponsorship. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The AA preamble states, Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of people who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution. Does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. So the format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope from the book, Alcoholics Anonymous. We encourage you to engage in conversation and ask questions after the meeting pertaining to the step discussed tonight. So tonight will be, we do steps 8 and 9 in two parts. Tonight will be the first part and next week will be the second part. Please welcome our panel this evening. We have Amy and Travis. I'm gonna read the first paragraph on page 76, and Travis lost the backstage toss and he'll go first. Backstage pass. Brain.
Coin toss.
Coin toss, brain, yeah. Woo. Page 76, now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. Let's look at steps 8 and 9. We have a list of persons we have harmed and to whom we are willing to make amends. We made it when we took inventory. We subjected ourselves to a drastic self-appraisal. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. We attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. If we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol.
Hi, everybody. My name is Travis Kalmbach. I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Travis.
It's good to be here tonight. I'm grateful to be sober tonight. I'm a member of this home group, a good standing member, at least I think so. I have a sobriety date. It's August 24th of 2020. I was separated from alcohol for what I hope to be the last time. At that point in my life, I had a trash bag full of clothes and, I was about to be homeless, for the third or fourth time. And, I didn't want that to happen. I didn't intend for that to happen. I was suffering from untreated alcoholism. And, I know that to be the truth today. And it's later in this chapter, it talks about like being a tornado and roaring through the lives of others. And that's exactly what I did. And it's kind of hard to talk about this without telling you kind of where it came from and where I'm at now with it, you know, and what it means for me anyway. It says here, I'll just kind of keep it within the framework so I don't go off in left field, which is what I tend to do sometimes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning that we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. There was a time I was, first of all, I have an illness that demands treatment, and I will treat it one way or another. And I have a brain that tells me that I can drink, and I have a body that ensures that I can't. And on top of that, I have this spiritual malady that tells me I'm different from all of you. And you guys don't understand. My case is different. So on and so forth. Fill in the blank for your own story. But I tell myself all those things and I drink. I can't not drink. I can't stay sober one day at a time. I can't do it. I don't have the power to do that. I don't have the willingness to do it. I don't have God. I don't have a spiritual remedy for my internal condition. And that's exactly what this program is designed to do, is to bring about a change sufficient enough for me to recover and stay recovered and in permanent recovery. It talks about it in the book. And so I forgot where I was there, but I got sober in 2020, and it was during COVID. I went to this treatment center, and 2 weeks into that treatment center, I had a spiritual experience. And there's not enough words in the English dictionary to really describe to you the way that felt and what that looked like in my experience. But what I will tell you is that I haven't been the same since. It was to change the course and the direction of my life and the trajectory of it. And it's held me in good stead to this very day. And the punchline there is that if that were the case, if that was the only thing that were required of me, I wouldn't be here right now. I agreed in that moment during that spiritual experience to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol between God and I. And it was during a 20-minute out of body experience that I had, and I came up from in the middle of a room about this size, and I'm bawling my eyes out, and I didn't care what any of you thought about me or what was going on there. Just, I knew something had happened for me, and I felt different. I knew something was different, and something had to continue to be different in my life if I were to remain comfortable sober. And I got to work right away. And I'll speed that up by saying I wrote a fourth step. I did a fifth step. I was willing to admit that these things were objectionable, that were, you know, holding and driving a wedge between you and I. I was willing to let those things go. I asked God on a daily basis to take those things from me. That's steps 4 through 7. And 8 and 9 is about you. And how do I get right with you? It's all about me, you, and God. There's no one else to play with. That's the steps are designed for that purpose. And the action-oriented steps in 4 through 9 are to bring about a change sufficient enough for me to remain sober. And 10, 11, and 12 is kind of staying in that game and growing and understanding and effectiveness and growing towards you and helping you and making my life none of my business. That's what it is. That's what, at least the way I understand it. But at this point, I'm just scratching the surface of a very, very deep experience. And I'll kind of end with this. I'll tell you first, maybe I'll tell you this. So I got home from this treatment center, and I was, I committed to staying in a recovery house for 3 months because that was something different that I've never tried. And I decided to do that. So I come home from this treatment center. I go to this recovery house. And I work with my sponsor. I get through all the 12 steps, and it was time for me to go make amends. And I think so. I'll save that one for my next talk. But this amends in particular, it was kind of funny. I during one of my past attempts at staying sober, I was living in this halfway house in Florida, and I stole this guy's chicken. Anyway, I like to take things that aren't mine, you know, and I just like to hide behind the smoke screen of justification and like, I'm just going to pay him back or I'm just going to give him the money, you know. And anyway, I stole his chicken and he knew that I did it. And it was in a room full of men like about this size during one of our, you know, house meetings. And he called me out on it in front of all these people. So, all right, like. He's already got me, you know, frightened and pissed off and self-centered, and I'm driven by all these things, and they're driving me to lash out because I'm either a victim or an assassin, right? I'm either like, don't hurt me, I'll kill your entire family, you know? It's either one or the other. And at this point, I'm going to kill his entire family. I'm pissed, right? Because you just made me look bad in front of a lot of people. And I'm screaming at this guy at the top of my lungs. I'm threatening him in front of a room full of men. I'm lucky I didn't go to jail. Anyway, it came time to get sober. I get sober. This is years later. And I'm down in Florida. And it was time to make amends. This guy, anyway, I find out this guy died. And I couldn't get a hold of him. I couldn't make it right with him, at least at that time. And I came home and, you know, my sponsor was like, he was like, oh, this is a good one. I told him the whole thing, right? I just expected him to be like, well, you don't have to do that one. No worry about it, you know? And he's like, all right, perfect. He's like, go to KFC, pick up a bucket of chicken and a bunch of sides and bring it back for the guys in the halfway house and drop it off to them and tell them why you're doing it. And I did. And something felt really right about that, you know? I might have been the only big book that those guys were able to ever see. And I came in and I sat it down on the table and they all were like, why are you doing this? What is wrong with you? And I didn't care. I just knew that I would agree to go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And I was willing to take those simple suggestions that I had never been willing to do in the past. And anyway, that's extremely
funny. I'm Amy. I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety date is September 5th of 2016. My home group is Candlelight. We meet on Friday nights at 8 o'clock, 1301 Colley Avenue. That's near this neighborhood. Step 8. This book is suggestive, right? But there's lots of directions in this book. There's the language. Lots of people like to talk about the language of this book. The word now. That means right now. There's not really any, can't really debate that, the word now. It says now we need more action, without which we find that faith without works is dead. So we have this list, people we've harmed, and to whom we are willing to make amends. So I found, yes, I had a list. Each time that I've done the steps, I have found that I end up adding more people to the list through this process. You know, I look at it again because some people that I owe amends to, I did not have resentments against. So I add people to my list. Then there's that word again, now. We go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. I cannot argue with what that sentence says. It says now. Now we go out to our fellows and repair the damage done in the past. In my experience, when I have gotten hung up in the steps, that pain that I feel not only when I am out there drunk, but even in sobriety, that pain that I hold on to, it just gets worse. You know, I am meant to do these things rapidly, immediately, to save my life, to keep me, you know, going through each day. And that's what this program does for me. It is a way of living. And if I am not in these steps, if I'm not doing this program, life sucks. There's just really no other way to say that. It says, we attempt to sweep away the debris which has accumulated out of our effort to live on self-will and run the show ourselves. I did that for a very long time as an active alcoholic and also using other substances. You know, alcohol did for me what I needed it to do. It enabled me to... you know, do things out in the world that I wouldn't ordinarily do as a person, as a sober person, that I would not go out and do today. I liked the effect that was produced by alcohol, yes, but alcohol definitely was a gateway for me to be able to do things, you know, like steal, you know, because today I don't steal anymore, like cheat, because today I'm not a cheater. But I didn't care. Back then, you know, if you had what I wanted, I was probably going to get drunk and do whatever it took in order to get that. You know, those are just some examples of what self-will and running the show. Today in sobriety, if I am not nurturing my program, that self-will will come back and rear its ugly head. And yes, it will. And it says next, if we haven't the will to do this, we ask until it comes. It doesn't say that we stop, though. It doesn't say we stop there and we don't do anything else and we wait for the will to come. And it doesn't say that. It just says, if we haven't the will, we ask until it does. And in my experience, we continue to move on with the step and, you know, it comes. Remember, it was agreed at the beginning we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. So they talk, I mention this sometimes, Joe and Charlie read the big book. It's not in the first 164 pages. Joe and Charlie are not in there, but they are very funny. And they talk about squiggly writing and the we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. It's squiggly writing. And so we pay attention to that a little bit more. I do anyway. So we would go to any lengths for victory over alcohol. And today in my sobriety, it's not just going to any lengths for victory over alcohol. It is going to any lengths for victory over, you know, whatever is causing me the trouble. Because again, you know, the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is a design for living. It gives me steps to apply in my daily life. You know, not just my alcoholism, which, you know, tends to be the root of my problem. So that's all I have.
All right. Thank you both. We're going to continue on page 76. Probably there are still some misgivings. As we look over the list of business acquaintances and friends we have hurt, we may feel diffident about going to some of them on a spiritual basis. Let us be reassured. To some people, we need not and probably should not emphasize the spiritual feature on our first approach. We might prejudice them. At the moment, we are trying to put our lives in order, but this is not an end in itself. Our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. It is seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we've gone religious. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Why lay ourselves open to being branded fanatics or religious bores? We may kill a future opportunity to carry a beneficial message, but our man is sure to be impressed with a sincere desire to set right the wrong. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill rather than our talk of spiritual discoveries.
I love that leading with the chin. I love that. I don't know why. I love that line. In the prize ring, this would be called leading with the chin. Like, hey, I'm sober. I found God. Here's the deal. You know, you got to do these certain things. Like I could picture it. I was always, you know, this part in the book is very, very important because the whole book is important. The whole 164 is important. It's designed for me to, these are instructions, they're directions on how to work each step. And this is telling me that, it's about to tell me in the next paragraph, not to shy away from the idea of God. If it's, you know, so if it's appropriate, really. He's going to be more interested in a demonstration of goodwill than our talk of spiritual discoveries. So I tend to judge myself by my intentions and what I think, how I feel. I'm going to, you know, all those kinds of things. And you guys tend to judge me by my actions and you watch my feet. And so does everyone else in the world, by the way, you know? That's what I think that's what they're talking about. Anyway, it's a matter of, and we're still talking about a lot of step eight here. And But to be honest, I mean, I've heard people say like, oh, you know, write down who you're willing to approach and write down who you're not willing to approach. And that's all good. I think all that stuff's good. But it doesn't say that in the book. It does say that it's harder to go to an enemy than to a friend. It does say that, right? But in the moment when I had that experience, and this is not to brag, this is just my experience. This is only my truth, and this is all I have. But in that very moment, I wasn't unwilling to do anything in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that was even further exemplified or emphasized on when I made my first amends, which I'll share with you. I was 3 months. I was 3 months sober. I'm from Pennsylvania. I came here from Maryland. Anyway, I'm in Maryland. I'm going to Pennsylvania to make these amends. I'm full of fear. I've made some amends in the past. They were always words. None of them had any action or behind them. Anyway, I'm driving up to Pennsylvania 4 or 5 hours north. And I go up there, I'm full of fear. I call my sponsor. I'm like, I don't know what to do. He said, I was like, I don't even know where to start. He said, go and make amends to your mom. And I was like, she's dead. How the hell do you want me to do that? And he's like, go up there and write her a letter. And I had some other words with him. And he's like, I don't care how you feel. I don't care what you think. I just care what you do. Just go do it. Shut up. You know, so I did. I went up to this waterfall where we spread her ashes when I was 18 years old. She died of alcoholism. And my family and I spread her ashes over this waterfall. Beautiful, beautiful scenery, beautiful waterfall. I went up to this to go there, and it was during COVID. So you couldn't get there the normal way. It was like the road was cut off. So I had to go a different way. I went that different way. And I parked in front of these two really, really beautiful properties in the mountains in Pennsylvania. They had ponds, they had ducks, they had fences. It was just beautiful, right? And I parked and I'm full of fear, right? And I look over. I just said this quick prayer. I was like, God, please guide me through this. So I look over and I see this little opening in the fence. It was like about 30 inches by 30 inches, just enough for me to fit my body. And I said, oh, that's me, you know? So I grabbed my notebook, I grabbed my pen. What I didn't explain is that there was like this grass coming up, and there was like a lot. I felt like from what I remember, the sun was shining down on it. It was just welcoming. And so I went. And I got on the path, got in the stream about a mile and a half down the stream to the waterfall. And it was not an easy way to get there. There was snow on the ground. It sucked. And anyway, I get there. I said my piece. I wrote this letter. I wrote the letter like as if I'm talking to you right now. There was no thought put into it. It was very authentic. It came right from the heart. The only thing I remember saying at the very end was God was telling her, please continue talking to me through the channel of God's love. That's all I remember saying. Anyway, I burned the letter. I burned my pants. I threw it in the waterfall. It went down the waterfall. I cried. I meditated. I went back. I started getting back to my car. And I'm coming out, and I noticed these two ponds with these ducks. And when I was a kid, when I was like 5 years old, my mom used to take me to this pond, and I'd feed the ducks with bread. Anyway, I remember this thought is arising. This moment is happening. I'm starting to feel a presence, and I saw these ducks. And so I'm taking pictures, and as I'm taking pictures, I looked back through them the other day to see if I could see the property owners, but they're running, literally running out of their houses, forming a V right at me. They're coming right for me, and they are not happy to see me. I don't know if they have guns or what, but I felt like I had to say something. I was like, I'm part of AA. I'm here to like make amends to my mom. She died in the water, you know, whatever, the waterfall 2006, whatever, whatever. And he was like, the guy probably felt sorry for me. So he was like, go tell that guy over there. And I told that guy over there, and that guy over there told me that there were 13 cameras on the properties, and not a single one of them detected me. And as you can imagine, I was having a completely different experience than he was. I would imagine he was thinking like, you know, technological failure, things happen, so on and so forth. But that was not the case. He said, is that your car up there? I said, yeah. He said, you know, usually we tow people, but sorry for your loss. Have a nice holiday, blah, blah, blah. See ya. Thanks. Thanks for not putting me in jail. Anyway, I get to my car, and there's a caution tape around my handle and a note on my windshield that said, private property, do not park here. We will tow you next time. The only reason why I remember it was it says that because I took it home and I put it in a picture frame because it affected me that much. And with the caution tape, I put the caution tape around. Yeah, it was really dope. But what happened was what it did for me is that it further emphasized my willingness to go through with this process. And I was not afraid to make any more amends. I didn't walk into any of my other amends after that with fear. It was just, this is what I'm here to do. I think I made like 10 amends in the first hour that I had that experience. I'm going back to the businesses. I'm paying back the money. I'm going back to the old employers. Hey, you know, all this stuff. And I didn't plan that. That wasn't my power. That wasn't, had nothing to do with me. But that's just my experience.
A little bit more about the willingness and the fact that these steps are in order for a reason. My first sponsor, I actually had to, because I had a question about this. I was willing to do just about anything to get through this, to get through this process, to stay sober, to not drink anymore. And my first sponsor had to explain to me that I did not have to go back to a very dangerous person who I had stolen from when he went to jail. And if I had showed up on his front porch to tell him that I was sorry for taking his drug money, that he would probably kill me. Don't do that. Like, listen to your sponsor. It's fine to be willing. It is fine to be very, very willing. But I am a person who actually needed to have that explained to me. I don't know if anybody else would ever need that explained to them, but I was ready to go and say that I was sorry to a person that I had stolen from, because, and we do these steps with a sponsor. I've had several sponsors and had the privilege of being led through the steps with each of those sponsors. And another sponsor of mine, in going through, you know, step 8, our real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. So one of my experiences, I was on my resentment list. So what do you do with that? You know, I had to learn through this program that part of being able to fit myself to be of maximum service to God and the people about me is to take care of myself. You know, I can't be running all over the place doing this for you and doing this for you and doing this for you if I'm not taking care of myself. And one of the absolute, if not the absolute most important thing that I can do as part of my program, you know, is stay involved in the steps, stay involved in Alcoholics Anonymous to the best of my ability while also, you know, living my life. And it took me a while to get there. It says, it's seldom wise to approach an individual who still smarts from our injustice to him and announce that we have gone religious. You know, in my experience of making amends to people, it has been better to talk more about how I am going to change, what I am going to do to be different, how I'm going to pay you back. People in my life today know that I am in Alcoholics Anonymous, like the people who mean the most to me in my life. They know I'm in Alcoholics Anonymous. And because I grew up around the rooms, most of these people already know what Alcoholics Anonymous is. That's not everybody's experience, but that is my experience. You know, so they know that there's a spiritual component. I have not had to explain that to anybody. Again, that's just my experience. But they care more about, you know, what am I going to do things differently? And another thing about leading with the chin, laying ourselves to be branded fanatics or religious bores, it's not even just that. It's like, if I go in to an amends and I'm just saying, oh, you know, my life is so great and I'm doing all of these wonderful things now and I'm different and I'm changed, I am setting myself up for someone to say to me, I don't care. Mm-hmm. I do not care about that. They don't care because I was a shit to them. I was an absolute shit to them. And that hurts. Like, why am I going to set myself up to be hurt even more? No. And that has me needing to check in with my motives about why I am making that amends in the first place, which, you know, the real purpose is to fit ourselves to be of maximum service to God and the people about us. I am making amends to people because I want to be rid of the remorse. I want to be rid of the guilt, of the shame. I want to let it go. I want to lay this out and say, this is what I have done. I'm not going to do this anymore. You know, I can say I am sorry, but a lot of times people really don't want to hear I'm sorry anymore. I've said I'm sorry a lot, you know, in my life. But I want to be done with those things. And then, you know, that's why I'm making amends. That's all I got.
All right. I think I'm going to mash together the next two readings. We're going to continue on page 77. We don't use this as an excuse for shying away from the subject of God. When it will serve any good purpose, we are willing to announce our convictions with tact and common sense. The question of how to approach the man we hated will arise. It may be that he's done us more harm than we have done him. And though we may have acquired a better attitude toward him, we are still not too keen about admitting our faults. Nevertheless, with the person we dislike, we take the bit in our teeth. It is harder to go to an enemy than to a friend, but we find it much more beneficial to us. We go to him in a helpful and forgiving spirit, confessing our former ill feeling and expressing our regret. Also on page 77, under no condition do we criticize such a person or argue. Simply, we tell them that we will never get over drinking until we have done our utmost to straighten out the past. We are there to sweep off our side of the street, realizing that nothing worthwhile can be accomplished until we do so. Never trying to tell him what he should do. His faults are not discussed. We stick to our own. If our manner is calm, frank, and open, we will be gratified with the result. In 9 cases out of 10, the unexpected happens. Sometimes the man we are calling upon admits his own fault. So feuds of years standing melt away in an hour. Rarely do we fail to make satisfactory progress. Our former enemies sometimes praise what we are doing and wish us well. Occasionally, they will offer assistance. It should not matter, however, if someone does throw us out of his office. We have made our demonstration, done our part. It's water over the dam. Travis?
So my experience with this was not with someone I hate. I guess it's arguable. It was an ex-girlfriend of mine who I've been carrying this thing around for a long time. I had a kid when I was really young. I got her pregnant. We were in 9th grade. Anyway, she has the baby. We stay together. We give up the baby for adoption. Oh, that whole drama thing there. And then we stay together all throughout high school. Meanwhile, she's like sleeping with my brother and needless to say, I was suicidal at the age of like 18, and then my mom died the same year. So all these things are like happening in my life, right, that I think are making me an alcoholic and the reason why I drink and use other things. If it wasn't for them, then, you know, I would be okay, kind of thing, you know. But the point of my story is I had been carrying that around, that resentment around for a long time. She was part of my 8-step list. I got real clear on my mistakes, not my part, because it doesn't say that. There is no such thing as my part. I'm putting out the minds of what she did entirely, and I'm ready to look at this thing from an entirely different angle. And I'm looking for my mistakes. I'm looking for where I had been selfish, inconsiderate, all these things, right? And so I took some thoughtful discernment, prayer, meditation on this. I did a lot of work on this, and I wrote it all down. Anyway, I did that, and no action was put into it for quite some time. And just recently, actually, it was about a couple months ago, I was starting to, you know, feel really, you know, restless and irritable and a little discontent, and things were going on. And it just, it, for me, it usually has something to do with amends, unfinished amends, you know? And so I pulled out my list. I dusted it off, and she was on there staring right at me. Right. And, I made an easier one first. I called, my assistant principal. So I was suggested to make a phone call. Who doesn't want to get the phone call? So I called my assistant principal, who I owed an amends to for just being the way I was in school and not showing up, just all the drama that I caused and not, you know, all that kind of stuff. Anyway, I called him, right? And I had no idea how to get a hold of him. So I called the main office and I said, hey, is Mr. Iapolo available? I have a weird request. If you could just put me through to his voicemail, he could call me back when he's. And she said, hold on one second. She probably went, Peter, are you available? He probably said, yeah, put him through and put me through. And he goes, Mr. Kalmbach. And, you know, he's talking to me and chatting up and cutting up with me. And he was really kind of happy to hear from me. And I told him exactly why I was calling. I was very clear on my mistakes and where I had fallen short. And he stopped me from talking. And he said, he started crying. And he said, God's timing is everything. My best friend just died yesterday. And you happen to call me right now. And he's crying, bawling his eyes out. This is a 62-year-old guy, bawling his eyes out in front of him. How do you not be changed by that? You know, I didn't plan that for that to happen. And I assume it was drugs or alcohol or something that his friend died from or something. And I just happened to call him, and he knew I had struggled with it for all those years. He came to my first intervention, my assistant principal, my dad, my little brother, my dad's friend, my ex-girlfriend, her sister, all these people were in the room. I still remember it was yesterday. He was standing right there and they all went around and said something. And I claimed that. I said, you know, you really tried your best with me. I was not the best. And man, I'll tell you what, we cut it up for like another 10 minutes. And he said, next time you're in town, you come and see me, you know, all this stuff, we're going to talk. And, you know, it was awesome. Anyway, did that. And then I called my ex-girlfriend and 5 minutes of her time turned into 45, and none of that was forced. All the years of all this stuff just melted away in a matter of minutes. Man, what a cool experience. And all over the phone. It wasn't like I was always expected, or at least told, to go in person. Always go in person every single time, no matter what. Even if you have to fly and spend all the money in the world, doesn't matter. Go there in person. And this was all suggested to me. Who doesn't want to get that phone call? You know? All that stuff got made right in that moment. Anyway, that's it out of me.
So prior to coming into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, some people might have called me a nag. One person in particular, my child's father. And so the amends that I made to him is the one that comes to mind when I think about this, because I used to love to tell him what he should do. If I'm honest, and today I am, I still like to tell him what he should do. But I ask today, and that's a change. And sometimes when we are talking, I will say to him, do you want me to tell you what to do? Do you want a suggestion? Or are you just venting? And sometimes he will say, all right, what's your idea? And sometimes he'll say, no, I'm just bitching. And we'll, you know, go on. But there was a time when we could not have those kinds of conversations. You know, we split up when my daughter was really young, super fresh, very young. And he eventually became involved with another woman, had several children with her, and she is and remains, was and remains a sick person. And she was not easy to deal with. And she was all up in the mix, very much in the mix. and he allowed that. And that was very, very frustrating for me. And so for years, and if anybody has ever been, you know, involved in like a custody dispute or things about child support, in this data age that we are in, text messages get thrown around in court a lot. And so my daughter was born in 2007. This probably started maybe in 2009, 2010. In 2016, the beginning of 2016, I moved to Japan and I had a box, and I mean a box full of text messages that I moved to Japan with me, just in case I needed them, just in case I needed something to send to an attorney. And when I got back in 2021, and so, you know, I got sober, or started getting sober in, you know, 2016, you know, so took me a while to make this amends, the right way, but I got rid of those, you know, when I got back. He also got rid of her, but whatever. Going to him and being able to say to him, you know, this is what I did. This was my part in what happened. And I took it way back. This is what happened. This is what I did. This is how I contributed to the ongoing problems that we had. This is what I should have done differently. This is what I am going to do from here on out. Is there anything else that I can do? Those were the things that I said to him. And, you know, kind of like the book says, he said some things on his own. You know, he talked to me about his part. He talked to me about how our relationship should be going forward. And today we have a good relationship. His is probably, it's probably the best amends that I have ever made, aside from the amends that I'm, you know, made to our child. His is probably the best amends that I have made. So that's all I have.
Thank you. I think I'll just mash up the last two readings, and that'll give you guys a full four or five minutes to finish. Page 78, most alcoholics owe money. We do not dodge our creditors. Telling them what we are trying to do, we make no bones about our drinking. They usually know it anyway, whether we think so or not. Nor are we afraid of disclosing our alcoholism on the theory that it may cause financial harm. Approached in this way, the most ruthless creditor will sometimes surprise us. Arranging the best deal we can, we let these people know we are sorry. Our drinking has made us slow to pay. We must lose our fear of creditors no matter how far we have to go, for we are liable to drink if we are afraid to face them. And on page 79, although these reparations take innumerable forms, there are some general principles which we find guiding, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. We may lose our position or reputation or face jail, but we are willing. We have to be. We must not shrink at anything.
So it tells me multiple times that must not shrink. I can't dodge creditors. I have to pay the money back. It's not my money, it's their money. I am still paying a lot of my financial amends. And I do that through, I like to steal stuff. I like to take things that aren't mine. And I did that for a long time. Well, anyway, I came up with a number, and I added $500 to that number because I'm, you know, I'll justify anything and make it in my favor a little more, you know? So my sponsor had me add some money to it, each one. And I'm currently still, every month, a certain amount comes out of my bank account, and goes to a charitable fund, that, every one of those businesses actually donate to that I was stealing from. I did my research. I actually looked up to see each one of those businesses, who they donated to every year, and every single one of them donated to the Salvation Army. And so that's what I do. Every month I pay them money. And there's another one. Here's a good one. I managed restaurants for the better part of 10 years. And part of that, they trust you with the money and the bank and and the safe and all that. Well, I like to, take things that aren't mine. So I'm going to take the money and I'm going to try to make that money back by not charging you within the computer. I'm going to charge you for it. And I'm going to make up the sum in my head and do the difference and give you back the change. And so I did that and I would add up a lot of money. It's a lot of money, and I'm taking things, I'm selling the food. It's not even getting added in the computer. Anyway, I did that and I ended up having to get arrested and fired in the same day. And I go through the steps and I go back to the restaurant to make this amends to this general manager. And anyway, I made that amends to him and I ended up paying back the money to the county who charged me for the whatever it was. And another one was I worked at a Subway for a while and I did the same thing. And so what I do now is, even though I don't like to go to Subway anymore because I'm eating better, every time I go there, I put a $20 bill in the tip jar every single time. And there was a time where I was going there a lot for my daughter because she likes it. And so I'd be forced to go there and I'd try to do it without anybody seeing me because I don't want them to see me put the $20 in there to be like, yeah, So I would try to give them a bill, hey, what's it? Put it in the tip and just leave. And I did that a lot too. So I still do that. I just did it the other day, but that's it out of me. Thanks.
Thanks. Yes. Owing money. I owed money, to my family, primarily to my family, for stealing when it came time to make these amends. And I did, and in order to make those wrongs right, I asked, how can I repay you? How can we make this right? And the family members, answered, and I paid them what was owed. In some cases, they did not want me to pay them back. In some cases, other things were discussed in lieu of the financial payment. And that's just how it was for me. That was my experience. Going forward, I don't steal anymore. I don't steal from my family. I don't steal from places of business. I don't do that anymore. I also, the restaurant thing, I worked in restaurants. I don't work in restaurants anymore at the moment, but if I go to work in a restaurant again, I'm not going to steal from the restaurants. It again says in here, reminding ourselves that we have decided to go to any lengths to find a spiritual experience. We ask that we be given strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter what the personal consequences may be. It also talks in here about having, committed a criminal offense, which might land us in jail. I know I committed lots of criminal offenses that would land me in jail if I just went up to somebody and started talking about them. But, that's also one of those things that, guidance from a sponsor, you just don't do. This program, Alcoholics Anonymous, giving me it's a spiritual program. And that's what I have found through the steps. And the spiritual experience that it's talking about here in that sentence, that's the reminder. I'm not asking my sponsor. I'm asking God. I'm asking God to be given the strength and direction to do the right thing, no matter the personal consequences. And what comes to me through that is not just the strength, and the willingness that I carry through this process, but, is knowing that the higher power that I now believe in is with me through these things and is going to get me through these things so long as I continue to do the next right thing. That's all I got.
Thank you. We are going to pass the seven tradition basket. The seven tradition states that every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district area, and general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influences that might divert us from our primary purpose to help the alcoholic who still suffers. Our common welfare, a word about safety. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. And if you missed the safety workshop that we did last Wednesday, if you go to simpleactions.net, it's up there in the audio, right on the first page, right at the top, with links. You want links to resources? We've got them right there. Are there any announcements for the good of AA? I know you do, bro.
Hi, I'm Ben. I'm an alcoholic.
Hey, Ben.
Besides that, also, yeah.
Thanks, Ben.
Any other announcements? Simple Actions is a home group. If you're interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. There is literature available right over there. Please see any home group member after the meeting. We'd be happy to help you. If you need a book, please don't leave without a book. If you need a book, say book one more time. Sponsorship. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or would like additional information about sponsorship, I'll be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to us. Come talk to me. There's a typo here. It says, please feel free to talk to any of me. I brought most of us with me tonight. If you're shy, you can also send an email to info@simpleactions.net. And reminder, smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. The meeting after the meeting. Everyone is invited and encouraged to join us for fellowship at the meeting after the meeting, which will be held at Stella's Cafe. 22nd and Colonial, 20th and Colonial, right next to Kogan's, right across from
Bank of America.
Thank you. And can we thank our panel one more time? Thank you all for coming out. Thank the chair putter uppers and the coffee makers and just everybody coming together to make this meeting happen. And Jason, would you read the last two, technically three paragraphs on page 164?
I would love to.
Thank you.
A vision for you, big book, page one. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you have. See to it that your relationship with him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless. This is the great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of the past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you with the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us if you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.
Thank you. Circle up.
It's
the intellectual part.
We're not supposed to.
We can do it. Father.
I don't believe in anything. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever.
Amen.
Amen. Amen. And our text,